Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Well, big days for Daniel Wallace, Chapel Hill's Daniel Wallace, professor of English at Carolina and teaching creative writing, the author now of 5 novels.
That's right.
The latest of which is The Kings and Queens of Rome. But we were talking about the continuing excitement of the country about his first novel, Big Fish, because during this season, Big Fish, the musical, is opening on Broadway. And so, Daniel Wallace, do you know why I wanted you to come and talk to me?
Yeah, it is exciting.
Here's my basic question. You're an accomplished and successful novelist and writer and teacher and artist. And you went through the experience of Big Fish being made a movie and learned some things from that. You're a student. I mean, you're a quiet student. What have you learned as you've watched these different kinds of storytellers and producers of an entertainment venture and a way to communicate with an audience mm-hmm. as you've watched this musical development?
Well, a couple of things. I think primarily through the process of seeing it taken from the book to the movie and then the book to the movie to the musical, the adaptation process is one that I find incredibly interesting and so full of its own kind of life. There is an originality to it that escapes, I think, some people who come to the movie version of a book and think of it as the movie version of the book or as the musical version of the movie version of the movie version of the book. And that's really not the case at all, I don't think. The adaptation is more like adoption. And
what do you mean by that?
Well, what I mean is that the people who take your work and who say took Big Fish and turned it into a movie, they didn't Frankenstein-like take bits and pieces of the book and tear it up and staple it together and create this different kind of monster from it. They took ownership of it. They said, "This is now ours. Thank you for raising this story to this point. We are going to raise it from now on." And we've
adopted it. It's ours now.
Yeah.
The movie and then the musical. We thank you for giving birth to it. It's going to be totally
right.
It's going to be a lot different.
It's in a good home. We're going to give it a really good home. You can come and see him.
You can come visit.
You can come visit. You know. We don't want you coming in here and telling us how to dress him. You know, because
he can't come back to visit you anymore. He's in our house.
I can see. Well, who knows? Maybe I'll write a book about what it was like to have my book adapted from the book, the movie, the musical, and then we can make a movie based on the book that I wrote.
Tell us about what that book would be like. I mean, what could you put in that book if you did write it?
Well, in a lot of ways, it's the story of my adult life,
So Big Fish is when your life really Big Fish is the beginning of your life?
Not Big Fish isn't the beginning of my life at all, but one way of knowing that you have become an adult is when you make when you choose your career, when you decide this is who I'm going to be or this is who I want to be in the world. And when I was 23 or 4, I decided I'm going to be a writer or I'm going to do everything that I can do to become that because that's what I wanted. And so that's what I started doing. And it took 14 years to go from that point to the point where I had a novel that was worth publishing, which is Big Fish. So,
all right, so that's the opening chapter of your book.
Mythical memoir is the if you talk about Big Fish, obviously you have to talk about everything that led up to Big Fish, which was, 3 or 4 or 5 different other novels, and what happened to them? Why weren't they successful? Because they were bad. Then I learned how to write a book the way that I'm supposed to write it. Turns out to be Big Fish, very difficult to get that out into the world as it was. So I was just, at that point, having gotten it published, obviously just really thrilled with that. And that was all I wanted. That was my
goal.
You
got it. I got
it.
Life's over. My life's done.
Well, I mean, I did feel like I would never be unhappy again in my whole life. Once I got it published, I thought, I'm fine. You know, anything can happen. There's nothing that you could possibly do to touch me now.
It's golden. Like getting tenure at the university.
Actually, it is, except tenure is real. You know, tenure does make me happy every single day of my life.
Yeah. But I mean, it's something that many of us would strive for and want, mm-hmm. Because when your novel is published, it sets you apart from all of your other friends and colleagues who, like you, have struggled to write and are passionate about it, but haven't reached that point. It's a pinnacle. And I'll never be the same, because I'll always be a published author.
Well, yeah. I mean, after spending nearly 15 years trying to do something and then doing it, I felt, you know, it was just a great pleasure and also just a great relief, because it's after doing something for all that time. And
okay, this is Daniel Wallace's book. End of part one. And what's part two? Big Fish is published, and it's a reasonable commercial success.
Yeah.
And Daniel Wallace will never be the same. Blam. I mean, what's part two of your memoir about Big Fish?
The plastic surgery, the implants, all that. That's part two. Now moving on to part three. This is the first time I've talked about that on the radio.
Congratulations. Do you want to go into detail about that, or you just want to
know part two? It's not as expensive as you
think. I mean, can you talk about your
surgeon? It's not as expensive as you might think. You know, we'll talk after the show.
All right. Part three.
What publication really does, it allows you to continue to publish as a writer.
Usually. So you've got an agent, you've got a publisher who liked your work well enough, and if it's going to sell enough, they might want another one.
Algonquin Books of Chapel Hill, my greatest supporters and cheerleaders. So I had always had you have an agent a long time before the agent succeeds for you, but the goal is to keep writing so you can keep publishing so you can keep writing. I mean, it's circular like that. But when the movie was sold.
Wait just a second.
Yeah.
Because this is part three.
All right.
And I want to see whether part three involves your what you do next as a successful published author who has a book that people like, and then people expect you to be able to write another one that succeeds as well. So this is one pathway, and then the other pathway is the movie rights. Did they come concurrently, these things together? Which came first?
Which came first? You mean the publication or the movie?
The striving to write the second book after the first successful book, or did the movie come quick enough so that you had that under your belt as well when you faced this challenge of writing another book?
I was already writing another book before the movie happened, because it is a continuous thing. You don't stop writing, take the weekend off. And
well, as you write your book, would it be worth including how you felt when you got word first that the book is optioned, and then you know that there's delays and everything, and then all of a sudden there's a real deal? Would you describe?
You always have to go into these things thinking that they're not going to work, that they're going to fail, because it's so hard to put these things together. I did get an option for the book to have a movie made, and that's wonderful, and I think that's all I really wanted from it. I never particularly wanted a movie to be made. It was not a
got a little bit of money for the option, but you didn't expect it to go anywhere.
How
long after your book contract did the movie contract come in, or the movie option contract?
The movie contract came in right as the book was being published.
Wow.
Right. So
this
it was
the contract or the option?
The option.
Okay. And then how long?
Wasn't sold. The book wasn't actually purchased until I think 2 years later, when Steven Spielberg said that he was going to do it.
Well, tell us, I mean, can you share were you in the dark about this until somebody called you in the middle of the night and said, hey,
Again, if you think about that term, like an adoption idea, these people had adopted Big Fish for the movies, and they were loving, smart, imaginative, sweet parents. And they kept me, let me know what was going on in the life of this project. So, yeah, they would call me up and tell me, this is happening, this is happening.
Well, did you option it for 90 days or for a year or for 2 years?
This one, I think, was a year and a half.
Uh-huh. So they're working to try to meet the option, or are they trying to call you to soften you up, say, please extend it for
us? And then extend it, yeah. If I think we extended it for another 6 months.
Are the guys who optioned it the ones who put the movie together?
Yeah. Well, yeah, the producers and the screenwriter who took it to Sony, Columbia Pictures. Columbia Pictures is the actual entity who optioned it. And then the producers and the screenwriter are working to get it made, you know, get talent attached to it so that it will get through the studio system and people at Columbia will pay the money it takes to make a movie, which is, you know, in the case of Big Fish, upwards of $80 million.
Then as part three of your book is going to be focused on this option thing, but on the side you're writing, you're continuing to write your second book. This is sort of a side story to the Big Fish musical.
Well,
story.
I mean, that's my life.
I know, yeah. but the memoir.
The memoir, okay.
All right, let's take a break and get this thing together. I'm visiting with Daniel Wallace. We're doing it in the context of the opening on Broadway of Big Fish the musical, based on Daniel Wallace's wonderful book, Big Fish, and the movie, which came from it. Right now, I'm helping him to write his memoir.
Thank you.
Of the Big Fish experience, and we'll continue that after this short break.
Time stops when suddenly you see her. Time stops in what you thought you knew.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Our friend Daniel Wallace, author of Big Fish and four other successful novels, is excited, like many of his friends are, because we're in the season of the opening of Big Fish the musical, which is based on Big Fish the movie, which is based on Daniel Wallace's novel, Big Fish. And I've tricked Daniel into constructing his memoir of the Big Fish experience. And we've gotten to the point where Big Fish has been just picked up by the movie makers.
Right.
We want to end part three. Part three is, let's move to part four of watching the movie being.
Right.
What was the experience?
It was a great experience because I had been reading the screenplay as it was being developed. And so I knew that it was going to be a good movie that he had been able to adapt.
Were you helping to write it?
No.
Did they ask you any?
No.
You were just an outside observer.
Yeah.
But an excited outside observer because you liked what you saw.
Yeah, and they wanted me to like what they were showing me. You know, it was important for them.
I love this notion of this has got to be a delicate thing for a screenwriter who basically wants to be in charge, but he doesn't want the author of the book out there criticizing his work. He wants him to be supportive. So it's a delicate kind of association, isn't it?
And I think it's specific to the people that you're working with. Some people couldn't care less. You know,
You mean some book authors?
Some screenwriters couldn't care less what you thought about what they did.
Forget about these are the old guys. They don't belong. We got the idea from them, but they got nothing to contribute. We don't care about them anymore.
Right, and if they disagree, then they're wrong. So it's just the luck of the draw was that I fell into this wonderful group of people who were very smart and talented and cared about storytelling and were great people. So it was didn't have to be that way. It just was. And they were interested in what I thought because they respected the source material. They respected the writer. They didn't kill the writer after the screenplay was developed.
There's another theme that I'm interested in terms of what's happening to you during this time period, and that is that you're watching another storyteller work with ideas that you're familiar with and you love some of the things he's coming up with. Maybe you would say, gosh, I wish I'd thought of that. I would have put that in the book. Other things you'd say, this is totally new, it wouldn't belong in the book, but I like what he's doing from a storytelling standpoint?
I mean, I think that's the latter is probably more to the point, because the being able to adapt one story into a completely different place, into a completely different genre of storytelling, that's a real skill. And he was able to do that and change it in a way that is significant. You know, it's, I mean, he changed the book.
Where's the most significant change? What are you talking about?
I don't know. I mean, well, the you mean from the book to the movie? The movie, there's the love story is a big part of it. It's not that big a part of the book. There's a circus in the movie. There's no real circus in the book. So these are things that he created in order to tell that story, and I think they worked for the movie, but I didn't have the feeling that, oh, I should go back, if I could, and go back and put a circus in my book, or go back and make the love story. You know, the love story is in the book. It's just...
It's quiet.
It's very quiet, yeah. And so it's remarkable what other people can do with the material that they have to work with, and to be able to see it and to transform it into the appropriate way of telling the story is... to me, is what, where the magic is.
You're a professional, not only writer, but you're a teacher of writing. And so you see the differences in skill sets and attitudes and background that might be required to be a screenplay writer.
Yeah.
We are just talking about other novelists who have gone to Hollywood and been pretty, maybe even more successful as screenwriters than they were as novelists. Mm-hmm. I mean, that in some cases it's a transferable.
Yeah.
What are the differences in?
Well, there are a lot of differences. There are a lot of differences in the world that you're working in as a screenwriter. It's show business, and it's a. It's a bunch of people have to get together to make your
it's
movie.
It has to be a more of a cooperative, collaborative.
Collaborative, venture. I think, is probably the word, yeah. Collaborative, and it takes lots of money and a lot of people to get your product out there.
Right, but in terms of writing it, doing the screenwriting itself, help me with this, that I can see some advantages to being associated with that process in terms of as you watch the organization of the story in a way that you would never, that you as a novelist working in your closet somewhere or would never be required to do anything other than satisfy yourself. You've got people looking over you and saying, this transition doesn't work. We got to stage this or we got 2 hours and you're trying to expand it, that you'd have all kinds of people looking over your shoulders. And would that be useful sometimes to have that kind of imposed organization on you.
Yeah. Yeah. You do have a lot of impositions with a screenplay that you don't have with a novel. It's because it does have to take place in about 2 hours usually. And if it goes long, you make choices that are cost choices. You want to shoot it in Moscow, but you can't afford to go there. So you go to a little neighborhood in Atlanta, and you make these choices. Whereas in a book, you can write anything. It doesn't cost you anything to travel to Moscow.
But the question I've got is some of that better? Is some of that with the imposed discipline to it make for a better story in the end?
I don't think it makes for a better story. I think it makes for a different story. It's a different kind of storytelling. It's completely different. And a novel exists as the thing in and of itself. That there's nothing other than what it is. You know, Big Fish, the book, has achieved, its perfect life form as a book. A screenplay is not alive. It's the directions to a director and how to make a movie. So you can't
We don't read screenplays.
Not so much.
Yeah. I mean, we do every now and then to learn about it. But
right.
Well, here's what, this is what, I mean, you're disappointing me because you're not answering the question the way I want you to.
Okay.
But, you answered it. So let me tell you what I want you to say.
Push me a little bit more.
Let me tell you what I want you to say. I want you to say at some point in watching this and reading the script as it comes along, you see, this is a technique or this is a device or this is something that I've learned that's going to make me a better writer.
Well, you should have just asked me right out. Don't be shy. Yes, it did make me a better writer reading screenplays. The economy, the structuring a screenplay, making sure that every scene moved the story ahead. I think you have to do that more in a screenplay than you do in a novel. The visual qualities that a screenplay has to have, because everything that you see in a you have to be able to see everything that you write down in the screenplay. You know, you can't write down thoughts unless you have some sort of voiceover. So I learned a lot from that, and I've started writing screenplays because of it.
Yeah. Oh, you have?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Well, this is probably part 10 of
part
your...
Part 10, this is the second part of my memoir.
Did you... we were in part 4 of your memoir, but is it... In part 4, while you're working or while you're watching the work on Big Fish the movie, particularly the screenwriting of it, that you say, well, maybe I could do
this. Absolutely. I loved it. And so I started doing it.
Well, we're going to take that up later, but first we're going to take a break. I'm visiting with Daniel Wallace. We're talking about Big Fish, the experience of the Big Fish to the movie to the musical. And we'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Daniel Wallace is the author of Big Fish. He is a professor of English at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And he's enjoying watching his first novel, Big Fish, after it was transformed into, became the basis of a very successful movie. It is now the basis, along with the movie, of a musical which is about to open on Broadway. And we started constructing your memoir of Dan and Big Fish, and we've gotten to, I think, ready to move to part 5, which is what happened when the movie came out. How did that have any kind of impact on your life at all?
Oh, I had a big life changing event. Even successful writers don't get paid that much money. It's hard to live on just that. So most writers are
teachers. Why not? You write a book, it's successful, they sell it for $25 and you get 10-15% of that.
Well, if you want to go down the list of how much actually of that dollar actually comes into your pocket, not very much.
How many books do you have to sell before you really
there's no
number. A couple
number.
Of thousand or 100,000?
Oh, how many actual yeah, you have to sell, it depends on what you mean by making a living. You know, if you live by yourself in an apartment, that's a different kind of living than having a family and
when you have enough to go buy big BMW or something like that.
That's a lot of books. I don't know if I've ever sold that many books, actually. I don't think that I would, I wouldn't have ever been able to purchase a house had it not been for the movie.
And what were the economic impacts of the movie, both in terms of book sales and in terms of what you got?
Yeah, that's the thing. It was the proceeds from the movie itself, but more than that, and more important to me actually was the readers that it brought to Big Fish.
More important to you as an author, but in terms of you as a man, as an economic entity.
Right.
Was it the movie royalties or the book royalties inspired?
Well, the whole idea that I could not control what the movie was, and if it turned out not to be a good movie, that would be out of my control. And I knew, though, that at the end of the day, that the important thing was to get the word out about my book. And the best advertising for a book is a movie or a Broadway musical. I mean, there's nothing better because the advertising is crazy what they spend on it. And so I know that people are going to be reading my book more. And that's what
they're going to be buying your book more.
And buying it, yeah. And that's
what I
want.
And that will turn into income. But in terms of, let me just ask you this. If I go to the local store or to Amazon or someplace and buy the DVD of the movie, and pay $15 for it or whatever they charge me, are you going to get a penny or two of that?
First of all, you shouldn't be buying a DVD. You should just stream it for free on Netflix, did you? That's like 100 years ago they did
but
that.
But you'll still get a penny or two.
No, I don't get anything. I don't make any money off the movie.
You don't make any money?
No.
They just bought it from you.
Yeah.
Lock,
just
stock,
bought
and barrel.
Yeah, and it's
so
gone. Done.
It didn't matter whether it was as far as royalties and stuff like that. It's not
right.
Like a book.
It's not exactly.
Same thing with the a Broadway musical. Doesn't matter whether it's a success.
Well, no,
or not.
That's a little bit different, but I feel like they're using me and I'm using them.
Yeah.
As thrilled as I am about this Broadway show, and nervous about it and shaky, it's still kind of just a sideshow to my life, because my life is about my books. I mean, my artistic life is about my books. So that's what all this is about, is getting my book to people.
Getting big fish, first of all, big fish to your people, your books. And of the people who buy Big Fish, the book, based on their hearing about the book from the musical advertising, are going to see the musical and wanting to have more of Daniel Wallace.
Right.
And then maybe they like Daniel Wallace, so they buy one of these other, copies of the other four books. So it pushes book sales, and that's what drives your income other than what you get as a faculty member.
Somewhat. Yeah, I hate to tell young writers especially, it's just not an economically wise decision to be a writer. And don't look at it in terms of making money, because it's just not there in any significant amounts for the most part, unless these fun other things happen, like movies and
accidental kind of things.
Yeah, lucky, very lucky.
Well, let's go back to, I think we're in part five of the Daniel Wallace memoir of his association with Big Fish. And putting aside the economic things that have the money that you make from this, it's an exciting time when the movie comes out. And tell us about that.
Yeah, it was very exciting, and it turned out to be a great movie. So I was thrilled with it. And the book sales people did start buying the book. I mean, they knew that it was there. It's great. So
we talked earlier in terms of your memoir that you became a different person when your first novel was published. That made you different from the rest of us who write books. And then there's another category that puts you into, it's sort of like moving up the belts in karate, or kung fu.
Right.
You're moving towards a black belt, and a very important level, belt level, is I sold my novel and it's published.
Yeah.
Another belt level is my novel has become a movie. I mean, that's, so you get that belt.
Right.
Did that change your life? Did it change?
Well, I don't know that I can completely buy into that analogy, but because
would you buy into it a little bit though? Would you?
Well, I wouldn't, I wasn't going for that belt, and what it feels like is this very fortunate adventure that I've been allowed to go on because of happenstance, luck. I am just, don't try to second guess it too much. I want to enjoy it. And it is, it's just a lot of fun, to be able to go to a movie premiere is so much fun. It doesn't have any real meaning to me on any scale. It's just that I have access to be able to do that based on something that I had written. I'll go to a reading that I've been invited to do in Seattle, and I'll think, I wouldn't be here if it weren't for my writing. Mm. My writing has allowed me to come to Seattle. Mm. To me, that's just unbelievable that writing a story that I can then say, I'm here because of that. And that, it makes me feel like, that I am successful.
Yeah. Yeah. But the movie, I don't want to say it's icing on the cake. It's an introduction that is given to so many other people about your writing that other authors don't get. Other authors whose books haven't been made into movies. So people who've seen the movie and never even read your book, they know. Yeah. But they say, Daniel Wallace is the guy who wrote Big Fish. Well, it makes you different. Or did you even... But you didn't deal with that. If it's your memoir, you're not going to even put that in there. It's got to be when I write your biography.
Exactly.
I will put that in there.
That's right. And you better be making notes.
We're visiting with Daniel Wallace about his experience with Big Fish in the context of the opening in New York on Broadway of Big Fish the Musical. He and I will be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. Daniel Wallace is my guest. Daniel Wallace is the author of Big Fish, which has been made into a movie, and now we're celebrating the opening of that of the Big Fish the Musical on Broadway. It's an exciting time, and thanks for sharing your memoir of your experience. Now we're moving to chapter 6, which is, how does it feel for this story of yours to have inspired a Broadway musical?
Mm-hmm. There's that word, like awesome, that people use so much that doesn't make any sense anymore, but people use it so much. And also the word surreal, which I think people overuse. It was just a surreal experience. This is sort of surreal, though, I think. I think it's what the word is made for, because it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous to think of this story, which I wrote in the laundry room. It cost me probably, all told, $100 to write the book, has inspired people not only to write this beautiful musical, but to give all these people jobs. I mean, there's people who work now because of the story. And when I was in New York, one of the actors did come up to me and says, he said, thanks for the job.
Thanks for the job.
Yeah.
Yeah. President Obama would like to write you a letter. Said, thanks for putting these people back to work. That's fantastic.
That's hard to really put your brain around.
You've seen this production as it was previewed in the previews in Chicago in the spring. That you'll not have seen any previews. You're just going to go up. You'll see the opening. Mm-hmm. When you go to the opening, what would you be wearing, a tuxedo and shiny shoes? Or are you going to be wearing tennis shoes like you usually wear, or Converse shoes? Mm-hmm. What are you going to do?
There'll be tennis shoes, but I don't know what the rest of it's going to be. Uh-huh. I don't know what they wear to those things. I don't think they do black tie anymore.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
I don't think. I will ask.
Going to go up and stay a week? Are they going to take you to dinner? Is it going to?
Yeah, it'll be a long weekend.
Do they view you as an asset? Do they take care of you? Do they pay your way up there?
They view me as a part of the process.
Of the team.
Yep. I'm on all the posters.
Tell us about the exciting features of the musical that you're enthusiastic about. I mean, this is, you didn't have any music.
Yeah, my characters, I had no idea they could sing and dance. But the characters from the book are all there. And the exciting part is that the lead is played by Norbert Leo Butz, who really carries the show on his shoulders. He's in almost every scene.
This is the main character.
The
storyteller. He's got to do all kinds of, he's got to persuade you to suspend this belief or whatever the phrase is.
Yeah, if he doesn't work, nothing works. And he works. He is...
Why?
Because he is both, as an actor, he is appears accessible, middle American, at the same time yearning. He's the guy Edward Bloom is. He's just... He's every man.
And is he... When you... watch him, does he take you back to your book too? Are there places where you can see him mm-hmm. being the Edward Blum that you described too?
Now, as much as I love the movie, I would say that the character that he plays in the show is closer to
your idea.
My idea of the father in the book.
You need to tell me there's another Chapel Hill connection to this production.
Yeah.
Since that one of our favorite people is doing the costuming. And
amazing guy, William Ivy Long. I met him for the first time in New York. I'd never met him here. And we had a long conversation and talked about his ties and his love for Chapel Hill. And such a funny, funny guy. And he just won another Tony last year.
I saw him talking about the Big Fish, the musical, and he said something like, we talk Big Fish for breakfast yeah. down where I come from.
Yeah.
I mean, he's talking about us, wasn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah, absolutely. But one of the songs in the show were incredible. And one of them that features Norbert and the female lead, Kate Baldwin, is called Time Stops. And a lot of people will recognize it from a scene that's inspired directly from the movie, where when they see each other for the first time, everything freezes. It's kind of an iconic scene. And so it's drawn from that scene. And in the Broadway version, things slow down as he's watching her and singing to her. And then she sings back to him. And really, it's a wonderful introduction to the show.
I tell you what, we just got a couple of minutes, but maybe you and I could close our conversation and we'll just listen to this song.
That's great. Let's do it.
Time stops. Yep. My time with Daniel Wallace has stopped, but we're going to, all of us, listen to the little bit of the musical as it's opening on Broadway, really, as we speak. Listen to Time Stops from Big Fish, the musical. Thanks, Dan.
Thanks.
Time stops when suddenly you see her. Time stops and what you thought you knew changes, and life beyond this moment is better, bigger. Time stops, but still your heart is beating. Time stops, though you don't take a breath. She's there, and all you've ever wanted is nearer, clearer. I used to think the world was small. Now I don't think that way at all. Time stops when dreams come true before you. Time stops when fantasy is real. I knew this moment was expected, but this could